I wouldn't say we fell in love right away. I think we were, as they call it in the biz, trauma bonding.
And then after 8 years of being insufferably sober, I started drinking again.
Addicts tend to be rather sensitive people.
Aren't you Marc Maron? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, what happened to you?
Well, hi there. Welcome to Light Hustler, the podcast all about sharing your dark to find your light. Super cool announcement. Do you want 20 books about overcoming obstacles? Brand new books for free. Yes, you do? Great, because I am running a contest where I am giving one person 20 free books. Sounded like I was saying 23 books. No, my 20 favorite books about overcoming obstacles. Obviously, I talk a lot about overcoming obstacles, and next to sharing my struggles with other people, the thing that has helped me the most is reading about other people doing the same. So I have made a list of my 20 favorite books about this, and they include books like Blackout, The Glass Castle, Man's Search for Meaning, The Language of Letting Go, a whole bunch. It's a variety. It's memoirs, it's self-help, it's spiritual, and I want to give them to you. So if you want to be in the running to win my 20 favorite books about overcoming obstacles, just go to lighthustler.com/giveaway. That's right, lighthustler.com/giveaway. You will be entered into the running to win them. I'm so excited. Now, today's guest, well, this is an episode from my storytelling show. You know her, you love her. Her name is Laura House. She is arguably the funniest person on earth. And she is a TV writer. She's written on Samantha Who and Mom. She starred on one of MTV's first reality shows, Austin Stories. And she has a new comedy album out called Mouth Punch. This is Laura House talking about her panic marriage. Because I am bringing up, like, really the funniest person I've ever known in my life. She's done so many things that I said, like, what should I say in your bio tonight? And what I'm going to tell you is she just got back from London where she was working on a comedy show. And she has an album called Mouth Punch. I am allowed to give, yes, I'm not even going to tell you her name yet. You can still applaud. Don't give away the secret. I can give you this, but she's got some for sale, but you're going to want to buy them all. This is Laura House.
Holy shit, these people with their cocaine. I'm like a hillbilly from Texas. Cocaine still, yeah. Cocaine still seems like, ooh. That's like up there with like real Coke or like Coca-Cola. We never got to have regular snacks. Anyway, I really kind of blew it because why would I say Coke? None of it was planned. How did you not watch Pretty Woman with the hooker? Two on the nose. I know, but at the end of Brian's story, he was like, so then we just sat back and watched Pretty Woman. Me and my hooker. Right, buddy? Right. I'm just going to act out the end of everybody's. I like that again in rehab, Vivian was like, you, come here. Like, that's just her fucking move. You, come here. What are you, school principal, Vivian? Calm down. You, in the hall. Where's your pass? Jesus Christ. I don't know you. Holy shit. I shouldn't have taken this out at all. All right, my name is Laura, and I love the whole idea of what Anna does of, like, you know, dark to light, because it's such a nice way of framing my shitty past, right? It's just such a nice, like, no, it's light now. No, it's light, like, worth it. Here's my story. When I was almost 30, I had been drinking for over a decade and surprisingly was not very good at life. I'd been dating a nice enough guy, parentheses victim, and I panic married. So this is the story of my panic marriage. Also, I'm reading a story, as you can tell. What the fuck, people, with your memorized... Anyway, I'll try to look up occasionally. That's what you get. So there's something about being 29 that makes you think that the worst thing in life is gonna happen in a few months. Like, I felt like, Allie, you know, you're in it now. Oh, good. It just is like just a door slide. 30 is like, oh, it's over. Like now I'm on the other side of the wall with the White Walkers. Like, what is 30? Or I just thought, like whatever my life is the day I turn 30, like, that's it. Like, you're stamped. Like, you better fucking make it by the time you're okay. Like, grab a partner. And anyway, you get it. It's like you're a legitimate adult. There's no, like, well, I'm 30, but I'm a baby. Like, you can't say it out loud. So it was... I was supposed to have it figured out in my 30s. Like, 20s are for drinking and goofing off. Check. And then, like, you grow out of it and into a functioning adult. That's what my other friends did. Like, they had jobs they'd been at for years by the time they were 30, or relationships they'd been in for years, and they had families, or they were starting families. They had roots. And it wasn't that I didn't have any accomplishments by 30. Like, I had starred on an MTV show. Thank you. You can look it up later. What or now, I don't care. I'd been on HBO and Comedy Central. I'd made out with a lot of guys. And I could drink a ton. And I was equally proud of all of these things. And I'd moved to Hollywood with some television success, and I had a plan to make it. And then when I got to Hollywood, I looked around and I was like, well, what are you fucking supposed to do to make it? Nobody really explained it. So I wasn't good at finding work, but I was great at drinking. My favorite thing to do was try to make booze profit on a party. Right? We've all, when you're like, hey, we got $50, let's invest this, some Trader Joe's snacks and enough cheap booze to, like, people will bring alcohol. So, like, you put 50 in, you get $125 in booze back. Win. Like, Miss Manners, but you're just fleecing people for alcohol. And like all the best alcoholics, I mysteriously got by. Like, I lived in a two-bedroom in Silver Lake, a two-bedroom house with a roommate in Silver Lake. We had a yard with a lemon tree and a barbecue. I think I made like $800 a year. Like, I don't, like, I don't live in a house now. Like, how the fuck, like, you just fucking float through. I don't know how I do it. Fuck, irresponsibility is so great sometimes. So I started looking for jobs, and that's how I met him, the man to be my future husband / slightly more future ex-husband. So we met at work. Specifically, I had applied a job at an internet company, and that was all the rage. And I didn't get the job that I applied for, because they said, yeah, you know, this all sounds good. Just I'll give you a minute, and then just, you know, what salary, you know, do you want? I'll give you some time. And they left, and I made a couple calls. What do I ask for? I literally asked for 10 times what they ended up giving someone. Anyway, fucking grandiosity, right? That's on the in the column. So I met this guy. The guy who actually got the job I had applied for was this guy. We'll call him Goatee. So he was cute and quiet and medium build and sort of black Irish looks. And he didn't pay much attention to me, so I thought he had a girlfriend. Because I would go in every Friday, and like, what, this was a voice recording. This was a company called Telsurf. They were making it, if you can fucking imagine, this is gonna blow your mind, where like you could listen to the internet the way you could listen to like your voicemail. Telsurf. Like, you could surf the internet, but like on your phone, but like with your ear. There were companies for everything back then. So that was this company. So they were looking for someone at first to like generate what we now call content. It was years before we called it content. But they were looking for that, and then they ended up hiring kind of energy. So they hired this dude, and then they hired me to come in. They were like, you have a nice voice. Why don't you come in and record stuff? So I went in like every Friday and I recorded like movie reviews, because at this time, which was like the 1680s, people wanted to like, ah, what's that movie like? I'll call the internet on my phone and I'll just listen for, you know, 10 or 20 minutes till I get to the part about the review of the movie that I, from that one review. This girl reads it. She's got a good voice. I went in every Friday and recorded for some hours, and he never paid much attention to me, like I said. And around this time, I wore contacts. And I smoked when I drank, and I drank all the time. And here's what smoke does to contact lenses. It works its way up inside the lens, up next to your eyeball. And if you don't clean your contacts regularly, say you pass out in them all the time, it can lead to an eye infection. Now, I was totally safe because I had the kind of contacts that you like wore for a week and just throw away, until I got a horrible eye infection. I actually looked like a monster. Like I actually looked like as if this was, but like, I honestly walked out, there was an optometrist at the end of my block. I tell you exactly where I lived in Silver Lake. Hyperion by Griffith Park. There's an optometrist. Anyway, so I walked in, I was like, I think something's wrong with my eye. They were like, like they were shut, like, the doctor isn't here right now. Like, and they were like, you need an ophthalmologist. And I went, I was like, okay, like, it kind of hurts. Like, it's like, I'm sure it was, and I go to an ophthalmologist, and he was like, oh, let me take, and like, it was like a horror show. So he gave me, I had drops that I had to put in every 15 minutes, even at night. I had to I guess I can sleep for like 8 minutes, and then, I had to take antibiotics, like, it's a fucked up eye. And I had to wear an eye patch. Alcohol, though, right? It's so great. Worth it. I was like a horrible monster. And I had ulcers on my cornea. I had ulcers on my eyeball just because I'm too tired to take my contacts out. So I had to wear... All right, now, so I missed a week of The Voice job. I had to call Goatee and tell him I'm not going in. And then the next week I went in, I was wearing glasses. Suddenly, he's real interested. Dude loved glasses. Just real God shot, huh? Hey, this is God talking. I'm going to give you a horrible eye disease, but just wait and see what happens. It's going to work. You're going to look like a monster, but it's going to open a window. So he asked if I could come in later next week, and he mumbled it. He was like, oh, hey, do you want to come? Maybe if you come in and record later next week, we could hang out or something. And I was like, what? And he goes, you know, can you come in later next week? And we said, and I was like, I don't want to come in. It's like Friday traffic on the 101. He goes, oh, I just thought we could hang out. And then I was like, legitimately, I was like, is this guy asking me out? Yes. I'm suddenly in a movie. Oh, am I the pretty girl? I am. I will go out with you, sir. You didn't see me a week ago. You'll never know. So I was flattered, and I did not think I could do better. Anyway, we went out a few times. It was nice. We connected very easily, and like I just said, ahead of where I should have. I didn't think I could do better. I had the unenviable low self-esteem of a raging alcoholic, too. So I was just like, you're my... This'll do. He mumbles because I mean so much to him. There's nothing wrong with him. So what I wanted and needed from him or anyone was stability, which is what I interpreted his shyness to be. Like, I had had crazy years, like, performing stand-up and dating comics and making out with as many people as possible, which is a lot, humble brag. And so it was, like, time to, like, you know, be with someone, like who could set me right. And it's called using a person. It's called manipulation. Anyway, there's other words for it, but you can also call it love. So 3 months into our relationship, I had this other job. So I wrote freelance for this for a web series in San Francisco. So 3 months into like this, oh, this is going great with Goatee. The San Francisco job offers me a full-time position in San Francisco. I'd have to move. So immediately, fuck it. I dropped Goatee and I moved to San Francisco because I'm loyal like that. Bye. It was like the dot-com boom, and it was all this money, and I had this great writing job, and I was directing, and I lived by the beach, and inexplicably never ridden one in my life, bought a motorcycle. This is who I am now. I'm a motorcycle person who lives by the beach. Oh, I literally never learned to ride it. It just sat. I moved it from, because of street cleaning, I moved it from side to side of the street for a year. Anyway, I was happy, and I knew Goatee wasn't really for me. Like, we didn't have anything in common, and what I really wanted was to spread my wings and my own life and be on my own. And I was flying high on my self-esteem extreme upswing. And one day, my mom called me at work, which was unusual, and so I was afraid something was wrong with Dad, and she told me she had cancer. Yeah, what she said was, well, I have cancer. That's, I mean, you can beat around the bush a little. You know what I mean? Like, she was like, hi, how are you? Mom, what's going on? Well, I have cancer. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I finally had money where I could, like, fly to go home. Like, well, like, was she going to be in the hospital, et cetera? So I asked. I was like, what's going on? Is there going to be surgery, or what are you doing? She goes, well, we're going to go to the hospital. Okay, when? And I'm just thinking, like, I could fly in Saturday. I'd be there for at least a couple of days. And she goes, well, we're going to have a bowl of soup. Then your dad's going to drive me to the hospital. I was like, you're calling me on the way to the hospital to treat your cancer. And she goes, I said we're going to have some soup. And I was like, holy shit. It was the weirdest conversation. But suddenly I looked at my life and was like, it was just completely meaningless. It was like I hadn't done any, I hadn't taken any roots. I had just like tried to be an actor and a comedian, and I had a good job there, but it wasn't going to last forever. And like I'd just been drinking for 10 years. I had nothing to show for it, so I married Goatee. Because cancer can make you panic, Mary. And my mom was really, really happy. She loved him. Like, and she was just happy, like, oh, someone likes you. I'm not really sure how she phrased it. But she was just happy, like, oh, like, he represented stability to her, too. So she didn't want me to travel and perform and come home to an empty house. She wanted, like, a normal, stable life for me. And that's what he felt like, someone normal and stable, the opposite of me. And it turns out, when someone is quiet and likes to stay home, it could mean they're normal and stable, but maybe it means they're comfortable with themselves and they have no need for outside validation. It can also mean they're afraid of life and have no friends. Oh, it can mean that. Not us, but you've met them. But when you're determined to get married because your mom is suddenly dying of cancer, red flags look like fun little spinning hearts around your person. And for example, like we set the date, and I'm sorry to upset you, I'm very old, but we set the date to get married, October 2001. I don't know if you know anything about history, but so I was still in San Francisco when the towers went down, and I called him, and I was like, oh my God, because he was still here, and I was like, are you watching the news? Like, this is terrible. I'm like glued to the set, and he goes, well, I guess I don't see what it has to do with me. I was like, I'm sorry, what now? And he goes, no, I just mean it's sad and all, but how am I supposed to feel? It doesn't really affect me. And I got off the phone quickly, like, not entirely realizing I was about to marry a dude that didn't think 9/11 was a big deal. But I did. I did marry him because in movies, it's really fun to watch people dramatically call off their weddings at the last minute, and the bride undergoes like last looks as her best friend like shakes her by the shoulders and is like, it's not too late to back out. But in real life, once those invitations go out, there's no, that's it. Nobody's clap. Like, it's not, that's all staged in film. You can't. I have this amazing capacity to swallow doubt. Like, maybe I'm wrong. Was 9/11 that big a deal? Why am I so judgmental? So a few months into our wedded bliss, he couldn't get a job. And he suggested we live with his mother, and I screamed out loud for a full minute, like in a horror movie. And I wasn't the only one with complaints. This dude had the audacity to tell me that maybe I drink too much. What? How dare you? The real problem was he didn't know how to drink. Who's with me? You don't even know him and you're with me. Fuck that guy. He didn't. And we'd hang out with his friends and their girlfriends. And by his friends, I mean his two friends. And one was his brother. Anyway. And they'd say something that sounded normal to me, like, oh, we'll watch movies. Let's get drunk and watch movies. And I was like, yes, finally, something I can do to connect with you people. And then they'd get like a six pack. And I was like, there's six of us. Like, what? So I'd get like another one, like, hey, just in case. And then like he's like losing interest, like at like half of his drink. And I'm like well into my third, like, maybe I'm dehydrated or I'm not sure what the problem was. And it wasn't good. I had to stop drinking with them. I was like, they're a real bring down. Anyway, it didn't work for a number of reasons. And he was shut down. I tried to get it annulled. And I told him I wasn't happy. And he said, it was just sitting in the apartment. I was like, I'm not happy with this. And I finally learned how to say it. And then he goes, well, I'm happy. And if you're not happy, then you need to go do something about it. P.S. This is something happy people say never. Like, they're, well, I'm happy. If you're not happy, I don't even know what to tell you. I'm fucking thrilled every goddamn minute of my fucking life. Why don't you go find your joy like I did? Okay. So I did. And that got me into my first 12-step program. Not the big one, because I obviously wasn't an alcoholic. I'm Texan. We just fucking do things big. So, I did, and then I got like my career shit in order, and I got a job, and I got like things moved along, but we still weren't working, and ended up going to marital counseling. And that's the thing married couples do right before they get a divorce. It never keeps people together, but you feel like you tried, and that's really the whole point. I mean, they might as well just call it that, the try doctor. Like, it makes me want to be a marital therapist, just to be like, mm-hmm, sure. You wouldn't have to hear a goddamn thing anyone ever said. Just, uh-huh, uh-huh. What, are you going to see me six times and then just fucking do this? Just collecting money. What do we want to do this? 3-4 months? Whatever you want. I don't care. I'm just, I'm the person you talk to sometimes before you get divorced. Whatever. It doesn't matter. My friend's a lawyer. We work together. No big deal. You go right next door. I'll validate your parking. I don't care. I'd be the best marriage therapist. Just like, yeah, it does not sound like it's going to work. But if you want to come back 5 or 8 times, that's cool. So we saw a marriage counselor, and it was like this. So the therapist looked, so we're sitting side by side, and she looked at me. She goes, Laura, like, how's this going for you? And I was like, I don't feel listened to. I feel like I feel upset, and I do all this work to try to explain it in a nice way and communicate it. And then he's like, okay, I get it. Great. That's good. And then I give it time to change and nothing happens. And I just feel like I'm fucking crazy. Like, am I invisible? Like, what's going, like, nothing I'm saying is registering with this guy. And she goes, oh, okay. And then she turned to him and she goes, well, how's this going for you? And he goes, no, I feel good about where we are. Laura just got a great job. We're going to buy a house. You know, like, you know, I'm excited where we're headed, you know. And I screamed again. I screamed just like, ah, like just a primal, like Jamie Lee Curtis would like pull the car over and be like, what the fuck is going on with you? Like just a, like I like, it was terrible. It was so much louder than the, he wanted to live with his mom scream. So, and then the therapist looked back at him and goes, did you hear what Laura said? And he goes, she just does that sometimes. So that was it. That was it. That was my breaking point. That was the one that did it for me. When I realized, oh, he never listened. Like when I did all this work to communicate and get happy and do my part of the stuff, and then I was just being tuned out. I was just like, he just agreed and dismissed and just had no interest in it. And so I left. And for months after we separated, and part of the issue was like, I just felt like I was doing everything. I wasn't getting anything in return. There was no us going on. It was just this like sort of drag. And like for months after we separated, we still saw each other sometimes because we thought it was weird to like get a divorce and then just never see each other again, even though that's what it is. So, but one day he started dating and he was like, oh, you can look at my dating profile. Like we were being very modern and I didn't look at it until I did. And he used our wedding pictures. Is that, okay, so that is weird. All right. And I'm almost done here. But so one, I don't know if you've used online dating, but there was this one of him, like, he's in a tuxedo standing in front of a stained glass window. I mean, you wouldn't know by looking at the picture that was the church I grew up in and we were about to get married. But that was, so if you see that on a person, be like, oh, like, it doesn't work the same for guys, I guess, that are, you know, or same set, like that. I mean, if you're in a wedding dress and you're like, I'm ready to date, like that would be, but I guess, guys, we don't know where you were. You're just all dressed up. So, and our official engagement photo, and I'm cropped out of it, you see a little bit of my shoulder and my, and like my fingers like haunting it. Like, ah, I'm still fucking there, kind of. And, there's a picture of him that I know for a fact that was taken in Hawaii because I took it on our honeymoon. Anyway, I looked at the screen and I was like, God, I'm still doing everything for this guy. And I just thought, like, what is he doing for me? And then it hit me. Oh, this. He's teaching me to let go. Like, this is done. Like, this is moving past this. And I don't drink anymore. I eventually did go to AA. And he was the only person in my whole life who ever said, I think you might be an alcoholic. So God bless him for that. And I don't drink anymore. And also, what's even more important, I don't marry people I don't like. Coincidence? Yeah. Thanks, you guys.